In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, March 15th, 2013. I'm a year ahead of myself. On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, as we do every week at this time. And two of my favorite guests in the countdown this week, Bob Suda, who's president and senior consultant at Suda & Associates. And good to see you, as always, my friend.
Same here, Francis.
And thanks for coming on. Tim McManus, vice president of education and outreach at the Partnership for Public Service. And also good to have you back in the
always
studio.
Always great to be here.
You guys have chosen some good stories and some things that I didn't expect to see in the countdown. So I'm looking forward to that as we start out with, as we always do.
Number three.
Bob, your third most important federal news story of the week is from FCW. The headline is Big Data's Big Hurdle, Federal Policy. And this seems to be where we get to about this time in each of these discussions. As the next new technology piece, whatever it is, comes down the pike, we get about 6 months to a year into it, and everybody goes, wait a minute, how do we manage all of this officially? What are the parameters under which we should be dealing with this thing?
Right. That's a challenge. I mean, again, it's the buzzwords we always have every time something comes up, whether it's cloud computing or EVM and procurement area. Now it's big data. But, you know, we talked about big data back in the 90s on the financial side of the house. So when we were a CFO community, it was all about the financial data, how we're going to be able to take that, make information out of it. Same thing has to go here now with all the data that's out there, with the sensor technology we have today, things like that. And the question is, where are the analytics for that? Okay, how do you analyze all that data? So I think the agency has to take a step back and look at maybe their top 5 or 10 big, you know, problems, and how the data they have available to them today can solve those problems versus taking all of that data that's, you know, across the agency and figuring out how to be able to deal with that.
That's the element of big data, Bob, that I think is potentially more problematic than some of the other things, buzzword concepts that have come down the pike, is that big data, it looks to me, is very conceptual, where if you wanted to move something to the cloud, you moved it to the cloud, and if it worked, it worked. When SOA was a big IT thing, you set it up and you turned it on, and if it worked, it worked. If it didn't, you troubleshot it until it did, and that was pretty much that.
Right.
Big data is continuous, and big data is all conceptual because you don't just connect it all and turn it on. You have to figure out, or you and a team of people have to figure out what it is you want to know.
Right.
And so it's much more question-based, and it seems to me more abstract than your typical IT innovation.
Well, again, it comes back to the business environment. What are your business problems that you really want to solve when it's all said and done? So that's where the analytics comes into play. I mean, as we talked to, you know, a few minutes ago offline, it was about, if it's on Twitter, it must be real.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, the other part of this is the whole data provenance around that, right? So is the data really trusted?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you go back to the original source of that data and find that data and make sure as it goes forward, it stays as valid data? It's changing every day.
I'm surprised that folks are not talking more in the big data realm about the hygiene of the information they're using.
Right.
I don't know why that is.
I don't either. I mean, again, you know, the old thing on, you know, on a commercial about the internet, about the French model type of thing,
yeah,
right?
I love that.
So this is the same situation. I mean, there's a lot of data out there.
Uh-huh.
The question is, what is real, right? And what can you use to solve that problem?
Bob Suda's third most important federal news story of the week's from FCW. The headline is Big Data's Big Hurdle, Federal Policy. Tim McManus, but you used to be French model too, is that right?
I still am.
Good. I don't want to see the portfolio. Your third most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is Senate Democrats' Budget Balances Spending Cuts and Revenue Hikes. But I imagine that there's something else that you saw in this bill that called your attention to it.
Well, there's actually a couple things that are interesting. One, first off, this is about 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're starting to talk about 2014. We don't even know what the heck is going on with 2013 yet in real terms. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's a little bit of a disconnect there. And you find it a little bit ironic that we're actually looking at what's going on next year when we don't even know what's going on this year.
But I think that's good news because that signifies, I mean, all my fingers are crossed, but it signifies some desire, at least, to try to return to regular order.
So let's hope that's a good sign that you know what's happening now. You know, let's just let that run its course and let's look forward and look to 2014.
And
so again, I think that is a good sign.
And the other thing that makes me really happy is somebody that has covered the Hill a lot longer than I have, and that I trust to know these things, says there's an implicit message in this focus on 2014 on the part of Congressman Chairman Ryan and Chairman Murray. And that is, although the I's are not crossed, I's are not dotted and T's crossed. I mix them up sometimes. To your point about 2013 not being finished yet, there's an underlying assumption in talking about 2014 that some deal is at least in hand, if not actually signed off on yet for 2013, and that's really good news.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. There's some writing in here that at least makes some assumptions of what they're anticipating that 2013 is actually going to look like when it's all said and done. I think the other couple of things that drew my attention to this news story was first there was a recognition I think on the Democratic side that government does actually have to look at the way that it spends money and has to take a closer look at the way that it spends money. So I think, you know, some of the conversation and debate up to this point has been the one side of the aisle has said, you know, government has to cut. The other side of the aisle says government doesn't have to cut. Well, that's not actually what's in play in this conversation. The second one is, and clearly in the Democratic plan, it actually calls for $975 billion in cuts. Now, they're all non-specified at this point, but, you know, again, it leads to that. The other point, I think, in this one, which is really important, I think, for a lot of your listeners and just the conversation that the partnership continually has is the value that the Democrats at this point have put on the federal employees as well again, Chairman Murray said specifically that you know, a smart and efficient government is really contingent upon having good people in place and rewarding people for their work as well. So the issues around pay and retirement benefits is one that this plan at least looks like they're going to not say, you know what, this pay freeze has to continue and federal employees continue to have to take a hit.
Another thing that I'm encouraged by when it comes to the discourse in Congress about this, and Tim, you and I've talked about Congressman Senator Coburn before and his willingness to disconnect the size of government discussion from the efficiency and effectiveness of government discussion, not common on his side of the aisle. I spoke today to Congressman Blake Farenthold, who is the new chairman of the Federal Workforce, Postal Service, and Census Subcommittee in the House Oversight Committee, and he is sponsoring the Protecting America's Civilian Employees Act, which essentially is saying to the agencies, you and OMB are going to have to figure out ways to not furlough employees, to do the cuts without doing furloughs. Maybe he will join Senator Coburn as kind of federal employee. Congressman Wolf could join that on the Republican side, kind of a federal employees caucus to give them some support from the side of the aisle that they haven't really seen a whole lot from the past couple of years.
Again, I think that, again, continues some of the encouraging news that we are seeing coming out from things on the Hill. And again, I think, you know, recognition, again, in this story that government may need to cut, but let's actually make those cuts smartly, wisely, and not just take the meat cleaver to it.
Part one of my conversation with Congressman Farenthold is about an hour from now on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The third most important federal news story of the week is selected by Tim McManus, is from GovExec. The headline is Senate Democrats' Budget Balances, Spending Cuts, and Revenue Hikes. And you can read it and all of our stories linked later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Tim McManus and Bob Suda when the countdown continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Heather Rosen, who is the local franchise expert at FranNet. If you want to know more about her and her business, dial up frannet.com/hrosen. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman at ofplaw.com. Call us at 703-218-2100.
Looking to make a career move in technology? Start your search at PowerJobs.com, the new career site made for Washington's top talent. New on PowerJobs.com this week.
Senior Director, State and Local Government Affairs, Nuclear Energy Institute. API team developers, Hickory Ground Solutions. And Director, Government Affairs, ConocoPhillips.
PowerJobs.com. Finally, a career site made for you.
As the U.S. government adopts cloud services, virtualization, and other technologies, it must also look toward an integrated and enhanced network infrastructure. HP Converged Infrastructure, with the Flex Network architecture as the cornerstone, can revolutionize how data centers are built. Using a standards-based approach, HP Networking delivers a simpler, more secure infrastructure, enables agile service delivery, and drives business value from core to edge. Combined with HP servers, storage, and services, HP Networking protects businesses across physical and virtual environments, delivers application services in minutes versus days, and reduces networking costs. The HP Converged Infrastructure integrates servers, storage, and networking, eliminating technology silos and freeing up resources so you can focus on innovation. To plan your strategy or to learn about their OpenFlow-enabled edge switches with full lifetime warranty and no licensing required, talk to an HP representative at 800-277-8988. That's 800-277-8988.
Are you a civilian employee of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State? You may be eligible for term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America. Term life insurance helps provide security for your family in case something happens to you. It's money to pay your mortgage or your children's college expenses, or help ensure your spouse can retire in comfort. GEBA's group life plan offers affordable rates with coverage amounts up to $600,000. Civilian employees of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State. Don't let these exclusive benefits pass you by. Start planning today and get peace of mind for your family and protection for their future. Visit GEBA.com/termlife to learn more or to download an enrollment form. That's GEBA.com/termlife. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Strong enough for a man, built for a woman. I'm Emily Kump. On Monday's Federal Drive, we'll look at what goes into the new body armor for female soldiers. And the card around your neck gets you into the building. White House cybersecurity coordinator Michael Daniel tells us when it will get you into the network, too. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week. Tim McManus of the Partnership Public Service and Bob Suda of Suda & Associates choosing the stories in the countdown this week. And we are up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Tim McManus' Jason Miller story on federalnewsradio.com. The headline is agencies suffering reductions in services even before furloughs occur. And this is Jason's coverage of an event that was hosted by a group of federal employee unions. And they brought employees in from all around the country at this event this week, Tim. The message that you took away from this story and this event was what?
So, you know, we're all, I think a lot of people are waiting for the shoe to drop, which is furloughs start and then what doesn't happen, what's no longer provided. Mm-hmm. And I think the message is much like many of us anticipated, is even before any of the furloughs start, there are going to be some things that we start to see change. And in fact, Bob and I were talking in the lobby beforehand, and he was just recently on a flight, and he had a two hour wait to go through security at an airport because mm-hmm. they had three lines open. Well, that's the direct result, not of furloughs, but the direct result of TSA saying, you know what, we can't provide the same level of staffing that we were before, largely because of overtime, and that's going to mean longer wait. So already you're beginning to see some services and some things that are actually cut or diminished as a result of that.
And I think telling that story is important on the part of the agencies. My fear is that some agencies or some organizations are going to go a little bit too far. For example, I don't know for a fact, but this just struck me as I read Jason's story, Bob. Dale DeSottle, the president, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, president of AFGE's Council of Prisons Local, said changes are happening already, and this is Jason quotes him saying this: "For Bureau of Prisons officers, there will be no overtime, no travel, and no more training. Training that is important in law enforcement. Training has to be sudden, no time to think, reactionary, and it will be gone. Our staff will be cut to extremely dangerous levels." Now, I can't speak to the staffing, but as a numbers guy, as you have been in your career, my understanding of the way sequestration works is X percent, whatever it is for the particular agency, down the line. And so wouldn't that apply to the training account as well as some of these other accounts?
It would apply across the board.
So for you to say, so for somebody to say that training is going to go completely away seems to me to be a little bit beyond what we would expect if the cuts were to apply across the board to each line item.
But
Am I off base there?
Well, a little bit. I mean, as an ex-CFO, you look at your training dollars, look at things you can actually cut to zero if you have to, okay?
I see.
So, but in law enforcement or in TSA or in some border patrol, you need to have those training sessions all the time.
Right.
It's required. The problem here is that everybody lives on overtime in a lot of these departments. And when you cut the overtime piece, you're actually cutting FTE mm-hmm. down to the bone. And you cannot get the job done without it.
That part I understand. I just was unclear on the idea that if, let's say the number's 9%, then it would seem to me that 91% of the training budget would still be available, because my understanding of reprogramming is you can't just take all of the rest of that money and put it someplace else.
It all depends on how it's actually in the budget for the agency.
Okay.
So it might be all part of O&M in a bigger budget situation.
I see.
So you can maneuver a little bit there. But in the past, I know at GSA many years ago, we would just say, listen, no more travel for right. the next 3 months. No more training for the next 3 months, right? And so whatever that cut was, we would just take it and not worry about it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So even though it says 9% across the board, it may be within the O&M account and how the budget is set up for the agency.
I see. So every agency and every agency's accounts will be affected potentially in different ways.
Different ways.
Okay. As we look at these issues, Tim, and you know, this Jason story talks about some of the employees that the union brought in for this, American Federation of Government Employees brought in for this event. It's very powerful. I mean, these are people saying this is exactly how it's going to impact me.
Absolutely. And so, again, if you look at the Border Patrol scenario, where they're going to cut overtime, you're looking at both because of the overtime reduction and the potential of furloughs further on down the road. You know, there's the potential for some of the Border Patrol agents to lose upwards of 40% of their income. Going forward, that's not insignificant. So one has to also believe at that point too. What's kind of the carry-on effect of that? Suddenly, you know, this is no longer an issue of can you get enough agents in. It's can you actually keep those agents as well, if that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as a result of the lack of overtime, CBP is basically saying that's the equivalent of 5,000 employees. By us cutting overtime, we've basically lost the equivalent of 5,000 employees.
Now, maybe I misread the story, and Jason reported on the story on the show when he covered it. It sounded to me, to some degree, like the message of this event was directed at the agency. And I wonder if that's really what they intended, or if that really is the actual audience that they should be directing the message to. Because it strikes me that for example, if Senator Mikulski's bill is what the final solution winds up looking like, and agencies like DHS, which covers all of these law enforcement agencies that were represented at this hearing or this event, if DHS has some reprogramming power and some other agencies have some reprogramming power, that's Congress has to give it to them. And it seems to me that that's where this pressure should be delivered at this point in time.
Yeah, so I think what's interesting in this whole conversation right now is it's hard to say who's the right audience. So for this event, it may well have been agencies. But, you know, ultimately, I think that's what a lot of agency folks, whether you're union represented or not, are actually struggling with a little bit, is who's our primary audience mm-hmm. in this conversation? Is mm-hmm. our primary audience getting the agencies to think a little bit differently about ramifications, so that, to Bob's point, if you can cut, you know, specific things out, if you can actually say we're going to cut overtime period, then maybe that's a way that we can actually do things without necessarily touching something else. If we can cut training in its entirety, maybe we don't actually have to touch something else. It may be a little bit that Congress is in fact your audience to say, you know what, if you give us the ability to reprogram things, we're golden. We'll actually make this thing work. There's another audience in this a little bit as well, which is the American public, which is giving them the heads up that, you know what, this is actually what's coming down the pike. This is what you can expect. And again, I was actually a little bit shocked when Bob did share with me that he stood in line for 2 hours to get through security, because I think that was some of the hyperbole, at least initially a couple of weeks ago with sequestration, which is there are going to be long lines at the airport. This is not what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. And what I'd heard to date actually is that, relatively speaking, there were not long lines at the airport yet. Bob now hit the long lines. Maybe he was just unfortunate.
Right.
But at the same time, those are the things that the general public's going to see. And I think government in general is trying to send a message to the American people that these are some of the things that you might not experience the same way that you did before.
It would be just like you, though, to get behind the guy with the knife collection.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
that would just be your luck. That's
well,
the way
interesting
it seems
part. I brought a pair of scissors through security. Yeah. They were about 6 inches long, and they passed it right on through.
It's your own fault. Yeah. You brought that on yourself.
Yeah.
Tim McManus' second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is agencies suffering reductions in services even before furloughs occur. And you can read it and all of our stories linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Bob Sudas next on this week's Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Veterans groups are asking President Barack Obama to step into a dispute over a new medal for remote warfare troops that was ranked higher than the traditional combat medals, like the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star. The veterans of foreign wars and other groups have sent a letter to Mr. Obama asking him to keep the medal ranked below the Purple Heart. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has already ordered a review of the new medal, which is for drone operators and cyber warfighters. I'm J.J. Green.
Airmen, we're on our way.
At EADS North America, we help our country respond to emergencies and natural disasters.
We see you. We're coming in.
From coordinating communications to medevac and emergency response, we provide the mission-critical systems our country demands. Every day, we support homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe.
Patient secure. ETA 10 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Here's Lonnie Anderson, Chief Information Officer at the National Security Agency, on a recent big data panel discussion on Federal News Radio.
At NSA, we live big data. It's a huge challenge for us in both of our mission areas, signals intelligence and information assurance, but it also is a great opportunity for us. Historically, we talked about challenges with volume, variety, and velocity. We think with the advent of the big data era, the volumes actually, as we move to new cloud technology, the volume actually becomes an opportunity for us, vice the challenge. For us.
To listen to the entire big data panel, go to federalnewsradio.com, search SAP. Government agencies at all levels are being asked to do more with less. SAP software can help agencies run better by making processes more efficient and reducing costs. And now government agencies can run faster and smarter than ever with the new SAP HANA in-memory computing platform. It's a whole new approach to managing big data. Learn more at sap.com/run-government. That's sap.com/run-government. Government.
The Washington Capitals and Skydex Technologies have teamed up to raise money for the nonprofit organization TAPS through the sale of Courage caps and t-shirts. TAPS is a tragedy assistance resource for anyone who suffered the loss of a military loved one in service to our country. Courage caps and t-shirts are now available for purchase, and all proceeds will benefit TAPS. Help support the families and loved ones of our honored military men and women. Go to WashingtonCaps.com to purchase your Courage cap and t-shirt today.
Health scams. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus. With HHS HealthBeat, this'll cure you? Or make you lose weight? Not necessarily. Health scammers are good at taking your money and bad at delivering what they promise. So a smart shopper has to tell the difference between what looks good in the ad or on the net and what the product really is. At the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, Gary Cootey is an expert in detecting health fraud. He says that if it's an unproven or a little-known treatment, ask your doctor.
Alarms should go off when you see words like new discovery or scientific breakthrough or secret ingredient or all-natural miracle cure.
Because it's not just the money you can lose. Some of the fakes can be dangerous, and relying on the fakes can delay getting real treatment, while the condition you want to treat just gets worse. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
This just in, the Greater Washington Government Contractor Awards have not been sequestered. Now, in their 11th year, the awards honor the leadership, innovation, and commitment to excellence of the region's government contracting sector. In today's tough environment, boost your visibility by nominating your company or executive leader for one of these distinguished recognitions presented before an audience of 1,000 business and government leaders. Learn more and apply today at www.govconawards.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service and Bob Suda of Suda & Associates. And Bob, your second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is Agencies Struggle with Cybersecurity Despite Increased Spending. It's their coverage of the release of the update to FISMA, right, that OMB releases every single year. And we have some coverage of that on federalnewsradio.com, too. What did you take away from the report first and then the coverage of the report afterwards?
Well, you know, the funny part is, I mean, we were discussing a lot of these things back in the early 2000s, right? So still fixing problems with email and things like that. You got to wonder how far we actually have come when it's all said and done. And are the people who are actually doing the FISMA report, the IG, they're just doing the review, how well-versed are they in cybersecurity? So I remember being at USDA and all the work we had done on the FISMA report back then. And then when the IG walked in the door, it was like, well, you didn't do anything right. Well, we thought we did a lot of stuff right, put a security program in place, did a lot of different things, but yet we're still challenged with these same basic issues of email and even security clearances, trying to get clearances for people to get in the door. Things are still taking 5-6 months to get people cleared. And in this world, we can't afford to do that. Mm-hmm. We got to be able to hire people quickly, and you know, 80-90% of the cost is personnel. So we need to make sure that our personnel are well-trained, well-focused, and know what, you know, what the tools are out there to be used to ensure that we're not getting hacked all the time.
When I went through this report, one of the things that jumped out at me is that for this year, OMB kind of reorganized the way the information was presented this time around. Any significance to that, or is it just, I mean, it's been done the same way for a number of years. I just wonder if difference that all of a sudden now we want to see the information a different way or present it a different way.
I just think it's just the presentation of the information. I don't think it's much different than what it was in the past.
Yeah.
I just think it's pretty much just looking at it a different way.
What do you see, Tim, when you look at a report like this and then think about what Bob is saying about this is kind of things are people are still doing things the same way they've been doing them? That's anathema to the kind of things that you're trying to work on at the partnership.
Yeah, and particularly when you look, and Bob mentioned this, you know, that 90% of the cost associated with IT security is actually in personnel as well. Part of the question that we, I think, have to kind of explore and look at a little bit more is, you know, do we have the right people? Do we have all the people that we actually need? So yes, 90% we may have 90% of our costs wrapped up in people, but is that enough? Mm-hmm. You know, as this article points out, if you look at DOD and the number of IT security folks that they have on hand, and then you look at somebody like DHS, and they've got a drop in the bucket compared to DOD. You know, is there a problem there? Is that something that we're actually not putting enough attention to, even on the people side of things, to actually address this?
Are we looking at some of these questions the wrong way, do you think, Bob?
Well, I'm just wondering sometimes if we should have a centralized, you know, security operation, right, for all of government, right? So everybody has to go through a centralized activity versus having a DOD do it one, even security clearances, right? So if you have a DOD security clearance, you have to get a different one for going to USDA.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't use the same security clearance. I mean, so we need to, again, info sharing and all the other stuff we have to deal with. But I think somewhere along the line, we have to say, okay, we need to centralize this, be a shared service, cybersecurity operation or something across government.
But what do you think the likelihood of that happening is? Because that would require DOD to say, I'm willing to give up some autonomy right to civilian agencies, and vice versa. It would require the civilian agencies to say, we're going to give a piece of this to DOD, well, which right doesn't really go over much better
than
the other way around.
What do you do with a civilian and a DOD one to begin with? You do something that at least consolidate some of that information,
mm-hmm,
especially on the civilian side. Because again, as you look at DOD, they're pretty much in step what they're doing
right
from the top on down. When you've got how many agencies on the civilian side doing this stuff, they're all doing it a little differently. They're all developing their programs a little differently and how they're dealing with these issues.
Well, so far we've tried to do that, it appears, at Homeland Security. Is that, do you think,
I think
a logical place for that to live?
Most definitely. They should be doing more of what's been done.
Mm-hmm.
I should be able, if I was at USDA or DOT, to turn it over to them and let my stuff run through their systems.
Tim, what about my question about whether we're looking at the people part of this equation the right way? Because when I read this story and I read our story on federalnewsradio.com and then went to the report, I kind of got the same message from all three sources. And that is, people are so much a part of the expense of securing these networks. And that may, as you said, that may not necessarily be a bad thing. That might not be the wrong way to look at this.
Yeah, again, I don't know that it's the right way or the wrong way, but again, if that's where 90% of the costs are, I think that's where you start, and you have to start there and say, so do we have the right people? Do we have the people doing the right things as well? And then I think, you know, to the earlier point about shared services is where are there? I mean, our previous stories were all conversations about budget and how do we manage dollars and cents? And, you know, is there a way for us to look at this enterprise wide? I think, you know, maybe not a direct parallel, but, you know, you look at how agencies process payroll. You know, not every agency processes their own payroll anymore. Why? Because they're duplicating systems. Can you do the same thing right here?
Right. But that's, again, we get to a situation that agencies have been averse to doing for a long time.
Agencies averse to doing it, cross jurisdictions in terms of funding. I think, you know, you talk about funding in general as well, and we're in this conversation about budget. What does the budget look like where we currently are right now? What does that mean even from a budget standpoint on something like cybersecurity when you don't necessarily know right now what your budget really is or it isn't?
That's right.
All right. The second most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Bob Suda, is from the Federal Times. The headline is Agencies Struggle with Cybersecurity Despite Increased Spending. That and all of our stories on this week's Federal News Countdown are linked later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we're up to the top of the chart. The number one most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Bob Suda and Tim McManus, when the Federal News Countdown continues on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Neil Carmel, Deputy Chief Technology Officer, National Nuclear Security Administration, on the Federal Executive Forum on Mobility and Government, sponsored by Appian.
IT becomes the enabler to deliver these capabilities to those constituents, laying down that foundation of innovation, providing that perfect intersection between cloud and mobility to where the user now doesn't have to worry about where do I go to get stuff.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The age of enterprise mobility is here. Your employees and customers expect it. Federal directives mandate it. Appian accelerates the creation of mobile-enabled process applications that are enterprise-ready, process and data-driven, and available in the cloud. Appian is the leader in business process management software throughout federal military, intelligence, and civilian agencies. Government customers are at the forefront of driving real business value by modernizing processes for a mobile world. To learn more about how Appian can help your organization put mobile into rapid action, go to appian.com.
Hundreds of thousands of furloughs and cuts to every agency program. Sequestration is officially a reality for federal employees, but many questions remain. How exactly will agencies implement the furloughs? How many unpaid days off can feds expect? And what will the cuts mean for contractors and industry? Federal News Radio is your source for the most up-to-date information on sequestration. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration, and while you're there, sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
Join the Coalition for Government Procurement on April 17th for their training conference, Continuing the Dialogue, at the Crystal Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. Hear how strategic acquisition can both improve the efficiency of government and provide an opportunity for businesses to offer innovative solutions. Any government and industry professional from across the procurement community should attend this event. Don't miss this opportunity to learn and network with your colleagues from government and industry. Register now at the Coalition for Government Procurement's website, thecgp.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week selected by Bob Suda and Tim McManus. And we are up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Tim McManus, is from Politico. The headline is Cabinet's Quandary Explaining Sequester Cuts. And the lead on this story, the very first sentence, is one that I asked a lot of questions about before sequestration hit. Was this a danger? Was this a danger? No, there's no danger in this. Just the administration's explaining it to the American people. Here's the first sentence of this story. President Barack Obama and his cabinet got burned last month for overhyping the effects of $85 billion in spending cuts. And then it continues. Now federal agencies are grappling with a double-barreled problem, how to make those cuts real and then explain what they mean to a public that didn't buy into the hysteria the first time. This is the classic case of make your own bed and now have to lie in it. because, as we talked about earlier in the program, it seems to me, Tim, these cuts are significant. They are going to be meaningful to the average citizen, but they've heard about them so far in such a way that leads him or her to believe that it's not going to be that big a deal.
Right. And I think this is a case of somebody cried wolf maybe too soon. And it's not, that's not to say that there aren't going to be ill effects, but you know, a lot of folks actually really, and this was frankly a concern at the partnership as well, is that when you talk about sequestration, when the date hit, people are going to expect the next day that, you know, that Monday when everybody comes to work, everything's going to look entirely different. Mm-hmm. People came to work Monday morning, nothing really changed.
Bob, the stock market went through the roof.
Again, the conversation about, you know, with sequestration, you're going to have long lines at the airport. My daughter actually left that day for L.A. The lines were fine. She came back a week later. The lines both in L.A. and here in D.C. were as normal.
I still think that one sued us.
Nobody saw any changes. So I think you know, part of the real challenge with this is a lot of people don't really know. Inside agencies don't really know the full effect yet. And I think that our earlier conversation, you know, all three of my stories, budget. Our earlier conversation about how do you have to manage your cuts within an agency? Depending upon how your budget is set up, there's different ways to handle that. Mm-hmm. Without necessarily having to reprogram anything. So with that, there is still some uncertainty within individual agencies about, do we have to furlough? Do we not have to furlough? Do we cut all of our training? Do we cut part of our training? Do we cut all of our travel? Do we cut all of our, you know? So when we go out there too soon saying, we're going to furlough, when we may not have to furlough anybody, or maybe we don't have to furlough as long, we actually are setting ourselves up a little bit for people to jump on us and say, see, it really wasn't as bad as what you thought it was.
It's been interesting, Bob, because I get a lot of inquiries from my friends in radio across the country that do shows in other cities and so on, that call me up or email me and say, explain to me, and then fill in the blank, some aspect of this. And that's the one that I get the most, which is, explain to me why we don't know any more 2 weeks after this has started or whatever than we did beforehand. And some of the folks are trying to turn it into another episode of these goofy federal agencies don't even know what they're doing, what's going on. But it's a lot more complicated than anybody expected it to be, considering it's something that really nobody's done before. I mean, we've prepared now for how many shutdowns over the last 4 or 5 years?
Right.
Quite a few. The agencies have a kind of a protocol down for that. This is a completely different animal.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a bigger animal than we had in the past. I mean, I remember the shutdown in 95. We shut down the government for a week, you know. Essential employees had to be there. We had to shut the heat off in the buildings, right? So we've been through this before. I think it's a little different this time because I'm not sure that the Hill or the administration has really, now they're talking, right? Mm-hmm. I think there was a more or less this battling of heads before that is not there now. I think they're finally realizing that we need to talk to each other and try to resolve this problem.
I think one of the challenges there too, Francis, is with some of that, and folks may actually see it as, you know, again, Washington or government at its worst once again, where they can't quite figure some of this out. I think part of some of the ongoing conversation, in addition to this simply being tough and really hard to do, is that you've got maybe an even more important deadline than the sequester deadline that already passed, which is the March 27th CR and what happens. So you can begin to move on things with sequestration, but you don't really know whether or not any of that's going to come to pass or not,
right?
Because March 27th is still looming, and you may in fact have a budget at that point.
My favorite hearing of the week this week on Capitol Hill was the Senate Homeland Security Committee hearing on the costs of crisis budgeting. Mm-hmm. And because I don't recall when we went through the whole shutdown thing I guess it was last spring, I don't remember anybody pulling back and saying, wait a minute, what does it cost us to go through all of these things that never wind up happening in wasted time, manpower, hours, all those kinds of things? And at least this time around, that's something that somebody on the Hill has decided is important to look at.
The administrative cost of this whole process over the last 3 months is probably enormous. Mm-hmm. I mean, for every program manager out there, to CIO, to CFO, have sat in meetings constantly, day by day, for the last 3 months trying to figure this thing out.
Well, and the cry wolf part of this that you mentioned earlier, Tim, is not sequestration related, and I don't think it's dollar related. I think it's crisis related. And people, you know, I think about my parents up in Pennsylvania. I apply the mom and dad test to a lot of these issues. And they don't pay a lot of attention to what goes on here. They know what they know from the news media in general. They don't really listen to the show, which I've given them a hard time about on a number of occasions now that they have broadband. But they, you know, they kind of live in their
world,
in the world that they live in. And this doesn't mean a whole lot to them. And their attitude is like I imagine a lot of people's, which is this is just another instance where they didn't get it together down there and they missed another deadline and we woke up the next morning and the world still is spinning.
Everything's fine. The same, right?
Yeah. What breaks us out of that on this, if anything, or is this just maybe not that big a deal to the average person yet, especially in the context of, as we've talked about a couple of times, and you just mentioned, Tim, looks like we'll probably wind up March 27th with some kind of a deal that mitigates this somewhat.
Yeah, so if we don't end up later this month with some type of deal, I think you then do begin to see some effects, and folks like your parents actually do begin to see some effects as well. So Bob's already experienced. I go back to it again. Bob's already experienced his 2-hour standing in line at the airport. That is actually an effect of sequestration. When somebody goes to apply for Social Security benefits, and because Social Security has actually offered early retirement to individuals, and now they're even more backed up on disability claims and new claims, they're going to experience that. When you file your taxes right now, and it takes instead of 3 weeks to get your electronically filed rebate back, it takes you 6 to 8 weeks. You're going to start feeling that.
Mm-hmm.
But those aren't going to be immediate things, and that's actually part of the concern with where the administration really cried wolf right out of the blocks is that the average person wasn't going to see most of that right out of the blocks.
Yeah, I mean the parks, even the farmers are going to feel it eventually, right? Mm-hmm. I mean they're going to start feeling over the next several months if nothing gets resolved. Right? Then we'll start feeling it as individuals.
Note to self: do my tax return this weekend. File that so I can get that.
Or do an extension.
I'm not doing that. I tried that once. Not doing that again. No. Tim McManus's most important federal news story of the week on this week's Federal News Countdown is from Politico. The headline is Cabinet's Quandary Explaining Sequester Cuts. And you can read it linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week from Bob Suda wraps up this week's Federal News Countdown next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Dave Grand, founder and president of MilitaryByOwner.com, a leading provider of advertising services and support to military families trying to sell or rent their homes. When looking for a web development company to design our site, we needed a battle-tested winner. Thankfully, we chose AmericanEagle.com. After reviewing many website developers that potentially could build a site for us, what tilted the scales in favor of AmericanEagle.com was their depth of experience and knowledge, 17 years of successful online development. AmericanEagle.com has helped the Military By Owner website to become a leader in the military real estate market. Working with AmericanEagle.com, we've experienced exceptional service and, most importantly, great returns on our investment. For these reasons, we're a proud partner with AmericanEagle.com for all our online needs. I strongly recommend AmericanEagle.com.
Call AmericanEagle.com at 703-WEBSITE to learn how they can develop a website solution for you. That's AmericanEagle.com, 703-WEBSITE.
When faced with opportunities and challenges, it's important to have a reliable information technology partner on your side. Make a confident choice with GovConnection. Our extensive experience serving the federal marketplace ensures we can identify and apply the right purchasing vehicles to equip your organization with the right tools to accomplish your mission. The IT marketplace is full of companies who claim to be different. Choose GovConnection and we'll prove it to you. Call GovConnection today at 800-800-0019. That's 800-800-0019. Sponsored by Cisco.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
More than 80% of the federal systems count on private sector critical infrastructure to work. Should one of the telecommunications, electricity, or other providers be hacked or go down from a natural disaster, agency mission would be in peril. Tune in to Federal News Radio on Thursday, March 21st at 12 noon to hear how agencies have implemented COOP and disaster recovery over the past decade and where they need to go next. Thursday, March 21st at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, sponsored by Symantec.
Government IT acquisition professionals find innovative solutions for a cost-cutting era at Acquisition Excellence, March 21st at the Grand Hyatt downtown. Join over 500 government and industry peers to learn about acquisition innovation and workforce empowerment. GSA and the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council host this education and training event. Register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Look for the Acquisition Excellence link on our events page.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Tim McManus and Bob Suda. And Bob, your most important story is from FCW. The headline is, Bill would make continued wage freeze a reality for feds. And this is problematic because this is the side of the hill that you would expect would have some more sympathy for federal employees than the other. This is the Democratic continuing resolution. Senator Mikulski essentially going to the floor of the Senate to apologize to federal employees, to say, we're sorry that this has to be done this way, but this is the way that it's most likely that we're going to be able to get a deal done.
Well, you know, federal employees have been beat up for the last several years, and, you know, they need to get some kind of, you know, rainbow out there that says we're going to get something down the road. Mm-hmm. At least show something in the bill that's going to, in the future, that's going to show some kind of pay raises going on 15, 16, or whatever. So they have nothing to look forward to. They really have nothing to look forward to. As you can tell, I mean, there's a lot more retirements going on all of a sudden, right? There's a backlog of an OPM of a number of retirements that are happening.
Yep.
So I think the challenge now is, are the federal, especially the senior people, as well as the staff people, are they really engaged in the day-to-day activities of the functions of the government and what our responsibilities really are? Most of them right now are focused on furloughs. Mm-hmm. How am I going to pay my bills down the road? How am I going to do anything when it's all said and done? So vacation stops. So the whole industry, whether it's hospitality, food, restaurants, or whatever, everything's going to change over this environment. Right. So every time we do this to the employees in this area or across the country, there's a major effect on the economy in that perspective.
Are you hearing success stories from people at agencies that are doing a pretty decent job of keeping morale up and keeping employees engaged, or is this really just problematic across the board?
So I clearly some agencies are still trying to do a good job and doing a good job and trying to keep employees engaged. But I think if you look at the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey and the partnership's best places to work in the federal government rankings from this past year, when some of this conversation was going on, but clearly not to the extent that it is right now, across government, that index score went down. So clearly this is hurting morale. You know, as Bob said, retirements, OPMs beginning to see them go up actually in February. Normally January is a big month. Mm-hmm. 20,000 retirees in retirement claims in January of this year held true to historical patterns. In February, another 20,000. Historically, that's about 5,000 or 6,000. So clearly, you know, there are a number of folks out there probably who are saying, you know what, now's the time. Now's the time for me to go out. So what does that do for your agency and its effectiveness moving forward if you're losing that knowledge and that experience? Largely losing it, not because they necessarily want to go, but because now's the right time for them to go after getting beat up. And then you have to ask the other side of the question is, if they go, are there folks who are willing to actually come in behind them? And I think, you know, certainly some of our work shows that, yeah, interest is still fairly high, but there are a lot of people, particularly on college campuses, who are really now questioning, is government really a viable option for me, given everything else?
Well, and given the challenges that you and I have talked about before about knowledge capture, Tim, are the people that are coming behind them qualified? Maybe they're qualified with skill sets and so on, but they don't necessarily have the knowledge base that they need to replace these high-level folks that are leaving.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think this is one of those areas where agencies typically don't necessarily do a good job, is that knowledge share with folks. So even if they're doing a good job on the recruitment side of things, even if they're doing a great job on engaging their current employees, how are they making that match between those who are beginning to head out the door with those that are kind of in the middle level to make sure that those folks are, you know, again, creating their great bench strength.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Building that bench, Bob, has been a problem for agencies for a long time, since the trough, as my friend Ron Sanders put it, in the 90s and right. early 2000s. We're understanding now why that's problematic.
But I think if you go back 5 or 6 years, I mean, the senior people in the agencies really focus on helping their subordinates to move forward and move upward, okay? Mm-hmm. I just think with the changes that have happened, the senior people now don't have the same, you know, they don't want to help anymore. They want to be able to focus on what they've got to get done
right.
and do their job basically for the day and then move on. So All I don't right. see that same mentoring going on.
We have a little bit less than a minute left. Bob, a month from now, where do you think we'll be on CR and sequestration?
I think we'll have a CR for 13.
Yeah.
I think DOD will have a budget for 13. I think the agencies will be able to manage their budgets a little better than they have in the past.
Uh-huh.
And I think 14, we're going to hopefully get something resolved.
Tim, what do you think?
So less about what's actually going to happen other than I think expect still a lot of the same that we're experiencing right now. Some really tough decisions that agencies are going to have to make.
So I can't pin you down any more than that?
No.
Oh, geez. You're no fun. Actually, you're a lot of fun. I love having both of you on the Federal News Countdown. Thank you very much for being here today. Bob Suda's most important federal news story of the week is from FCW. The headline is, Bill would make continued wage freeze a reality for feds. And you can find that story and all the stories we counted down today on the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And the Federal News Countdown is back next Friday from 3 till 4 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.